to Straight Talk with MJ. I am your host, Michelle Jeanette. Thanks again for joining me on another podcast episode. I have been out for a little bit, and I have good reason. We are grandparents for the first time. So exciting. We spent a week down there in Florida where the grandbaby was born, and it's just a whole nother level of love, like I put in a Facebook post this last week. It's not anything you can explain, I guess. A lot of other grandparents have told me the same thing. It's a kind of a different thing than your own kids. It's quite interesting, quite unique, but it's a lot of fun. So we hate that they live so far, but we're going to be making lots of trips to see them and the new grandbaby. So that was definitely a fun thing to be experiencing here the last couple weeks. Also in the last couple weeks, we have all experienced the horrific images coming out of Israel from the October attack, terrorist attack from Hamas. And the more time goes by, the more information we get about what happened. And again, there's always a lot of speculation and a lot of information that comes out at first that may not be particularly accurate. So in the fog of war, so to speak, definitely time is your friend. And as time goes by, you get more and more truth that comes out. So I reached out to a friend of mine who I have spoken with before. The first year I had my podcast, Miss Arlene Samuels, and she, I did an interview with her if you want to go back and listen to that from 2020. But she is married to a Messianic Jew, and she was on AIPAC for quite some time. She was a member of that organization, and just really good information from her. I reached out because there's so many issues surrounding Israel that's just been almost a forever thing, that the world is always against God's people. And even a lot of different information coming out of the Christian community. And I've been to Israel. I went when I was, the summer I turned 16, I spent, I was close to 6 weeks there as a teenager working at a school. We were renovating a bunch of things, but I really loved just being in that area where Jesus walked. It's amazing and fascinating, and just that part of the world is very, really, really cool to visit. We flew in to Jordan, and then we flew out of Egypt, Cairo, Egypt. So we had quite an array of culture to visit. And it's fascinating. I love that history. And of course, we are intrinsically connected to the Jewish people. Jesus was Jewish, obviously. And so, but throughout history, there's been so much controversy and so much hatred towards the Jewish people that I wanted to take a minute, because if you follow me for any length of time, you know I love American history and always lean back on to what our foundation is for this country. No matter what revisionist historians like to do, they can't erase the biblical and godly heritage that our nation was built upon. It's there in black and white. You can't dispute the evidence of letters and books and notes and journals and all kinds of things from our founders that continuously point to just how they built this nation on biblical principles and ideas. And it's there. It's there in black and white if you're willing to read it. So I always try with my episodes to bring truth of our history to the audience. And so when I had questions about the founding fathers in Israel or Jewish people, they actually did have some information from wallbuilders.com, which is a great source that I use a lot, in their Founders Bible, which I think, by the way, if you're interested, they're back in print. For a while, they were out of stock of the Founders Bibles. Highly recommend them if you're any interest at all in American history and how it's connected to biblical principles. The Founders Bible is chock full of stories and information from that era. So I go to the Bible, and I always, you know, I like this. It has things that kickstart my interest in information of history. And then, of course, they have other books, and I get books from other sources also when I'm doing history. But so I reached out to my friend and asked her to send me some basic information on Israel and this conflict that has been ongoing with the Arab people in Gaza and the West Bank. And they're called the Palestinians because it was a name given to them by first the Romans and then the British. It's Arab people and living in a section that was bordered off, you know, cordoned off during after World War II. And it's really Arab people. So that's what I've learned through my research. But I wanted to bring a little bit of information to you about that first. And I looked up some fascinating history. And I was kind of curious because I hadn't studied world history in a while since college. And so I had to refresh my memory about what was going on in that part of the world during the 1700s and 1770s and that kind of thing. Because, believe it or not, I may not get to that particular story today about the there were radical Islamic terrorists that the founding fathers had to deal with when we birthed our country. And I never even thought of that before, but it was there. So, but today I want to read something different. I'll probably get into that story another time. But so I looked up the history of just that whole area where Israel is now, as far as the land is concerned and the people during that time. And what I came across was from a website called jewishvirtuallibrary.org. It's real short. I'm just going to read part of what was going on just to give you a background of that area and what the founding fathers, what they saw the Middle East, you know, so what was going on at that time, so I could kind of understand their perspective as far as geographically also. During the 1770s was kind of in the middle of the Ottoman rule, the Ottoman Empire, which ruled from 1517 to 1917. At the beginning of World War I is when the Ottoman Empire collapsed. So I'll just read this part of it. Following the Ottoman conquest in 1517, the land of where Israel is now, was divided into four districts and attached administratively to the province of Damascus and ruled from Istanbul. At the outset of the Ottoman era, an estimated 1,000 Jewish families lived in the country, mainly in Jerusalem, in Shechem, Hebron, Gaza, Safed, and the villages of Galilee. And excuse my pronunciations, southern accent here, okay? The community was comprised of descendants of Jews who had never left the land, as well as immigrants from North Africa and Europe. orderly government until the death of the Sultan the Magnificent in 1566 brought improvements and stimulated Jewish immigration. Some newcomers settled in Jerusalem, but the majority went to Safed, where by mid-16th century, the Jewish population had risen to about 10,000, and the town had become a thriving textile center as well as the focus of intense intellectual activity. During this period, the study of Kabbalah, which is Jewish mysticism, flourished, and contemporary clarifications of Jewish law as codified in the Shulchan Aruch spread throughout the diaspora from the study houses in Safed. With a gradual decline in the quality of Ottoman rule, the country was brought to a state of widespread neglect. By the end of the 18th century, much of the land was owned by absentee landlords and leased to impoverished tenant farmers, and taxation was as crippling as it was capricious. The great forests of Galilee and the Carmel mountain range was denuded of trees. Swamp and desert encroached on agricultural land. The 19th century saw the first signs of progress, with various Western powers jockeying for a position, often through missionary activities. British, French, and American scholars launched studies of biblical geography and archaeology. Britain, France, Russia, Austria, and the United States opened consulates in Jerusalem. Steamships began to ply regular routes between the land and Europe. Postal and telegraphic connections were installed. The first road was built connecting Jerusalem and Jaffa. The land's rebirth as a crossroads for commerce of three continents was accelerated by the opening of the Suez Canal. Consequently, the condition of the country's Jews slowly improved, and their numbers increased substantially. By mid-century, overcrowded conditions within the walled city of Jerusalem motivated the Jews to build the first neighborhood outside the walls in 1860, and in the next quarter century to add seven more, forming the nucleus of the new city. By 1880, Jerusalem had an overall Jewish majority. Land for farming was purchased throughout the country. New rural settlements were set up, and the Hebrew language, long restricted to liturgy and literature, was revived. The stage was being set for the founding of the Zionist movement. Now, if you're not familiar with Zionist movement, there is a definition of that on here. And it talks about, it was actually coined by a man named Nathan Birnbaum in 1890. Its general definition means the national movement for the return of the Jewish people to their homeland and the resumption of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel. There's different movements. There's political Zionism, religious Zionism, socialist Zionism, and territorial Zionism. So there's all different kinds. And since the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948, Zionism has come to include the movement for the development of the State of Israel and the protection of the Jewish nation in Israel through support for the Israel Defense Forces. So that's just your basic definition of that. Again, there's a lot of controversy just around that, the fact that Israel is back in their land. So, one of the things also that my friend sent was, let's see where I can find it. Information she shared from Gary Bauer. I don't know if you remember him. He was political arena for quite some time, but let me see if I can find his article here. He talks about the atrocities of what happened on October 7th. Not only were Israelis brutally murdered, close to 1,400 Israelis were brutally murdered. Their bodies were defiled by radical Islamists. Some of these children were the grandsons and granddaughters of Holocaust survivors. Virtually every Israeli woman killed, from little children to 80 years old, was raped. Some women were killed first and then raped. But the evil Hamas unleashed wasn't just confined to Israel. We saw it erupt across the world. within several days in the last few weeks, you have seen the explosion of hatred and anti-Semitism all across the world, and even in our own universities, where of course we know they've been being spoon-fed this brainwashing of hatred of the Jewish people. It's really disgusting to see their hatred explode and just come to the surface. It's a, if you listen to any of the Christian prophetic voices, like, I guess, Chuck Pierce, Dutch Sheets, Lance Wallnau, those people, you will understand that this is not just a physical thing of hatred. It is a old, demonic stronghold spirit is what we're dealing with. The spirit, same spirit of Haman that wanted to kill the Jews in Esther's time. The same spirit that of Hitler wanted to kill the Jews during World War II and so forth. So, I mean, we have to look at it spiritual eyes as well as the physical. But it's really also stems from the neo-Marxist educational system and in the insane immigration policies that administrations before and the one now are implementing, especially started under, it's been going on for decades, but really ramped up under Obama, and it kind of was dialed back. A lot of it was dialed back under Trump administration, and then from day one, we've seen what the border looks like right now in our country under the Biden, what I call the Biden regime. And then, of course, just a couple of days ago, faced with the sudden explosion of anti-Semitism across the country, the Biden White House yesterday announced a new initiative aimed at fighting hate. But what was their announcement about? Not hate against the Jewish people. It was the announcement that the Biden-Harris administration will develop the nation's first national strategy to counter Islamophobia. Under all this hatred for the Jewish people, that's what they decide to focus on. This is why. And Gary Bauer goes on to say, as we and others have noted, the left is quickly discovering the limits of intersectionality that Democrats so proudly flaunt to everybody and promote. They're getting quite an ugly lesson that diversity is our strength may not, in fact, be true. So what's really happening? Earlier this week, and I had not heard this anywhere else, so thank you, Gary Bauer, for bringing this out. Earlier this week, the Biden White House received an ultimatum from the National Muslim Democratic Council. They demanded that Biden take, quote, immediate action to secure a ceasefire by Tuesday, October 31st at 5 p.m. Well, that time has come and gone. If Biden failed to deliver, they threatened to tank his reelection campaign by withholding endorsements, support, and votes in Michigan, Ohio, Iowa, Florida, Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee, where many of their voters reside. And I think in Tennessee, where I am, it's middle Tennessee there. And, of course, there's polling to back it up. According to a new survey by the Arab American Institute, 59% of Muslim American voters backed Joe Biden in 2020. Today, Biden's approval rating among this group stands at just 17%. So, yeah. There's a lot going on in that arena, like as usual. But even in our halls of Congress, people that are sitting there calling the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, which my friend was a part of for years, calling them, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez called them racist and bigoted, which is totally not true. But that's what they do. They like to do that. And of course, our own Republican Party, we had 23 or 29, I can't remember which number, that refused to censor Rashida Tlaib for her repeated anti-Semitic statements and refusal to condemn Hamas. There are several of them in Congress that are like that. They shouldn't be anywhere near the halls of Congress, in my opinion. If you do not love America and stand when you take that oath of office to uphold the Constitution, you cannot also uphold and defend terrorists like Hamas. You can't do the same. The two don't go together. So when asked earlier this week, Gary goes on and says, I noted the futility of calling for a ceasefire or pressuring Israel to stop fighting. Well, a top Hamas leader has now weighed in, and I believe his comments deserve serious consideration. Here is what the Ghazi Hamad told Lebanese media. Quote, Israel is a country that has no place on our land. We must remove that country. We are not ashamed to say this. The Al-Aqsa flood, a euphemism for the October 7th atrocities, is just the first time, and there will be a second attack, a third attack, a fourth attack, because we have the determination, the resolve, and the capabilities to fight. The occupation must come to an end. The interviewer then pressed Hamad as to what he meant, asking occupation where in the Gaza Strip. No, Hamad replied, I'm talking about all the Palestinian lands. Again, the interviewer pressed Hamad, asking, does that mean the annihilation of Israel? He answered, yes, of course. The existence of Israel is illogical, so everything they do is justified. In other words, Hamas will continue attacking Israel until Israel is annihilated. And through the history, if you have really looked into it, the beginnings of the current state of Israel from 1948 to present, Israel agreed to two-state solution from the beginning. And it was the Arab people of the Gaza Strip that said no, and they turned around and quickly elected Hamas leadership not long after that, and the terrorist faction of this has been in leadership for a couple of decades now. But so there's a lot to deal with going on, you know, this. And so I wanted to go back to, I forgot my friend's article she shared with me was really good too. I'm trying to find where I opened that up. Give me just a second, because she had a really good article on that she wrote. She writes for, also writes for CBN Israel. And, okay, so this is one of the things she sent me. A foundation of facts, trusted news about Israel. Apartheid question. Israel is the only country in the world that brought Africans to freedom beginning in the 1990s with the Ethiopians. IDF is inhumane when forced to take defense measures against Hamas terrorists to protect their civilians. Israel's Air Force always drops leaflets, sends text messages, and makes calls to civilians so they can evacuate safe places. Does Israel commit war crimes? Not according to international law and the Geneva Conventions of the 1949. Article 3 clearly prohibits murder, hostage taking, and torture of civilians. Israel is not guilty. Hamas is guilty. The two-state solution, which what I referred to, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has refused to meet with Israeli leaders since 2009. In 2005, Israel unilaterally handed Palestinians a state by withdrawing 8,000 Jewish residents from the Gaza enclave. Palestinians neglected the opportunity to build a luxury tourist destination and a productive life along the Mediterranean. Instead, in 2007, they voted for Hamas and became pawns of hatred under an evil dictatorship. The top Hamas leaders do not even live in Gaza. They live comfortably in countries such as Qatar or Qatar, however you pronounce it. And more than 1.5 million Israeli Arabs enjoy equal freedoms in Israel, with almost 8 million Jews working side by side as doctors, university professors. They serve in the Knesset, and they serve in the IDF by choice, not by mandate. And for 18 years, Israel has sent food, medicines, and building materials via semi-trucks. Gaza never fails to respond with various forms of terror, rocket barrages, and balloon explosives to destroy Israeli crops. along with the, if you remember, there was a period of time where they also had suicide bombers on buses and such. So now I'm at 25 minutes. That went by really fast. That's just some basic info from my friend and a couple of articles she sent me. So let's go to the Founders Bible and what they were talking about here. And I'll close with this. This is my history for the day. And, you know, just to give a perspective from that era. And they talk about Romans 11, which I highly encourage you to read the whole chapter of Romans 11, where Paul is talking about how we Gentiles, if we are not Jewish, are grafted into God's chosen olive tree of the nation, the people of Israel, that his chosen people. And we are grafted into that tree. If you look at olive trees, it's pretty fascinating how they grow and grow because they keep being grafted into that tree. You know, others come in and get grafted. Branches are grafted into it. So read the whole chapter of Romans 11. I highly recommend that. So in the Founders Bible under Romans chapter 11, it says, Romans 11 is very clear about the intrinsic relationship Christians have with Jews. Jews are God's unique people and are the root of the special tree of blessings into which Christians have been graciously grafted by God himself. Christians therefore owe a great debt of gratitude to Jews, for as Romans 11:18 reminds us, it is not you Christians who support the root or Jews, but the root, Jews, support you Christians. Through Christ, Christians have been grafted into God's chosen tree, and it nourishes us, not vice versa. After all, God very early made a distinctive covenant with the Jewish people and the nation they would become. In Genesis 12, 1 through 3, now the Lord said to Abram, I will make you into a great nation. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. 2,000 years later, near to the birth of Christ, God was still mindful of that promise. When they came to on the eighth day to circumcise the child born to Elizabeth, which was John the Baptist, his father Zacharias, quote, was filled with the Holy Spirit and prophesied, Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, for he has remembered his holy covenant, the oath which he swore to Abraham our father. That was in Luke 1. And today, 2,000 years later, God is still serious about that original covenant. After all, in Numbers 23:19, God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should repent. Has he said, and will he not do it? Or has he spoken, and will he not make it good? And in Psalm 105:8, he has remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations. America's earliest Christian settlers understood the special affinity that was to exist between themselves and Jews, and therefore openly welcomed Jews into the American Christian colonies. Consequently, by 1658, a Jewish synagogue had been established at Newport, Rhode Island, the colony established by Baptist minister Roger Williams. Another synagogue was founded in Savannah, Georgia. Only a year after that colony was founded by Christian leader James Oglethorpe and Methodist ministers Charles and John Wesley. And Jewish synagogues were also founded in Richmond, Virginia in 1719 and Charleston, South Carolina in 1750. Two other colonies founded by Christians for explicitly Christian purposes. The founding fathers, too, understood the special spiritual relationship that existed between Christians and Jews. Elias Boudinot, president of Congress and a framer of the Bill of Rights, therefore, served as president of the Society for Ameliorating the State of the Jews and made personal provision to bring persecuted Jews to America where they could have an asylum of safety and have the opportunity, if they so chose, to inquire into Christianity without fear or terror, which is a distinct departure from the unfortunate practices of earlier European Christianity. And President George Washington told a Jewish synagogue, quote, May the same wonder-working deity who long since delivered the Hebrews from their Egyptian oppressors and planted them in the Promised Land, whose providential agency has lately been conspicuous in establishing these United States as an independent nation, still continue to water them with the dews of heaven and to make the inhabitants of every denomination participate in the temporal and spiritual blessings of that people whose God is Jehovah." End quote. President Washington understood that the Jews were the source of the temporal and spiritual blessings that Christians enjoyed. John Adams was also effusive in his praise of the Jews, declaring, "I will insist that the Hebrews have done more to civilize men than any other nation. They preserve and propagate to all mankind the doctrine of a supreme, intelligent, wise, almighty sovereign of the universe, which I believe to be the great essential principle of all morality and consequently of all civilization." And the signer of the Declaration, John Witherspoon, understood that not only were Christians blessed because of the Jews, but that without them, Christians would not even have the scriptures. He said this: "To the Jews were first committed the care of sacred writings, yet was the providence of God particularly manifest in their preservation and purity. The Jews were so faithful to their important trust that when copies of the law or the prophets were transcribed, they observed the most scrupulous exactness. They not only diligently compared the one with the other, but even counted the number of letters in each book and compared and recorded the numbers." The reason that Christians had the Old Testament in their Bible was because of the Jews' unwavering dedication to accuracy in transmitting the scriptures. American Christians and the American Christian Nation, a descriptive term for the American nation regularly used by founding fathers, numerous presidents, and dozens of American courts, held a special affinity for Jews, and so a shoulder-to-shoulder collaboration was often apparent throughout the founding era. In the American Revolution, Christians and Jews fought side by side for American independence. Famous Jewish military patriots included Colonels David and Isaac Franks, synagogue leaders, Isaac Moses, a blockade runner carrying supplies for American troops, Major Benjamin Knowns, a leader in the battles of Savannah and Camden, Mordecai Sheftal, patriot leader in Georgia, and Chaim Soloman, who secured much of the funding Washington needed to carry on the fight against the British. Numerous other Jewish leaders, religious leaders, also served as revolutionary soldiers and officers. And there's a whole list of them here that they list here. Lots of names. Christian and Jewish cooperation was also evident after independence was achieved and the Constitution written. For example, when reporting on the Federal Constitution Celebration Parade in Philadelphia, signer of the Declaration Benjamin Rush, one of the most outspoken evangelical Christians among the Founding Fathers, happily reported that the clergy formed a very agreeable part of the procession. They amounted to 17 in number, 4 and 5 of them marched arm in arm with each other to exemplify the union. Pains were taken to connect ministers of the most dissimilar religious principles together, thereby to show the influence of a free government in promoting Christian charity. The rabbi of the Jews locked in the arms of two ministers of the gospel was a most delightful sight. There could not have been a more happy emblem. In fact, when George Washington was inaugurated, 14 religious leaders were involved in those activities, and both ministers and Jewish rabbis were included among that group. And Jewish and Christian leaders also joined together when the Bible came under attack. After Thomas Paine penned his famous Age of Reason, attacking religion in general and the Bible and Christianity in particular, not only were Christians quick to refute Paine's attack, but so too were Jewish leaders, such as David Levi. Similarly, during the Barbary Powers War, 1784 to 1816, which I'll read that story at another time, when Muslim terrorists captured and enslaved American seamen because of their Christian faith, Christian President James Madison dispatched American Jewish diplomat Mordecai Noah to negotiate with the Muslim terrorists to secure the release of captured Christians. Sadly, Noah was later brought home by Secretary of State James Monroe, who cited Noah's Jewish faith as the reason for his recall. But Monroe had previously collaborated with anti-religious Thomas Paine, who was extremely hostile to Jews and the Jewish faith, a hostility that Monroe also communicated. Unfortunately, not everybody's perfect, not even the Founding Fathers. Perhaps as appropriate reciprocity for the help we receive from Jews having fought side by side with Christians in the establishment of America as an independent nation, America in turn lent its aid in helping to establish the reconstituted nation of Israel in 1948. It is not without wisdom that today's Christians, understanding the clear teaching of Romans 11, still remain among the Jews' strongest allies and supporters, and remembering the promise of blessing given in Genesis 12:3 that they are also one of the world's staunchest defenders of the Jewish nation of Israel. Given the absolute, irrational hatred that is so often expressed towards the Jews, both now and throughout history, one is hard-pressed not to acknowledge the supernatural source of the evil that is bent on their destruction. Regardless of your particular end-time theology, knowing that there is coming an ultimate showdown when the nations of the world will be gathered around, where? Jerusalem, to make war against them, and if it is true that Jesus Christ will not return to the earth until, quote, they will look upon me whom they have pierced, from Zechariah and John, and cry out for him to come, it only makes sense that Satan would seek to destroy them, the Jewish people, from the face of the earth in effort that he might postpone his own day of doom and recompense. If for no other reason than that, we should be those who come to her defense. If ever there was a time that Israel needed the courage of her friends to stand by its side, it would be now. And this was written several years ago. So even more now. In today, in November the 3rd of 2023, is this even more true? So, there's a whole lot more we can talk about and get into theology, which I don't do. That's not my lane. I don't drive in the lane of that. I can dabble and sometimes switch lanes over to maybe a little bit of theology, but that's really not my forte. But I hope to bring my friend and do some more talking about this subject with her. She's an expert in it. And hopefully I could be able to bring some of her wisdom and knowledge to you guys here in the near future. And also I will be bringing some interviews with some local candidates that are running for school board. So pay attention to that when I put that out in the email. And if you want to sign up to get these episodes, because they're pretty sporadic right now, they're not very consistent, and I apologize for that. But if you don't want to miss an episode, there'll be a link. You can go to my website and at the bottom there, sign up for to get on the email list so you can get this when it is published. So anyway, be in prayer for, obviously, for what is happening in the Middle East. Pray for our own country, because what happened there is probably more than likely coming here because of the open, wide open border policy of this regime, where we've had over 10 million illegals cross over in the last 3 years. It's insanity. That's more people that live in my state of Tennessee. An entire several, I think that's more people than about 30, more than 30 states of their population. There's so much to talk about on that. But anyway, definitely be in prayer. There's a lot going on. And just pray for our nation. Every day, pray for our nation and our leaders. So, thanks for listening, we will talk again. I will be back with some more information on this topic and much, much more. So, thank you for listening, and God bless.